Welcome to Archery Country Podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to Archery Country Podcast. This is your host, Wade. Today we are talking about archery country tips and tricks. A few little things as we dust the cobwebs off of the microphone and earmuffs. We've been super, super busy in all the shops, and getting these out every other week isn't probably going to happen, just being honest with you, but once or twice a month will happen. And we got some guests coming up. I know I promised you some big things, and we will get there. But today's going to be a quick one, and I just want to give you a few of our, well, we started this last episode as Archery Country Tips and Tricks, Chicks, that'll work. But today we're going to talk about stabilizers, soft knock sets, and then also I'm going to give you a little insight on a new product that we're carrying here at the shop that will make your life easier if you're in the arrow building business or you just like doing your own thing. Building your own arrows, you can replicate things, you can duplicate things, you can make it really, really, really nice. So sit back and relax as we will rock and roll. Tips and tricks, stabilizers. So for those of you that run stabilizers, you got your brand new bow, you got an old bow, you got a whatever, year old bow, it doesn't matter what you have. Stabilizers is something that is super overlooked in the world of archery. It's becoming more and more popular as we continue with social media, and we have some guys out there and gals out there that are actually utilizing what a stabilizer can do, or stabilizers, and that's plural. So for those of you that looked up Webster's Dictionary, the definition of stabilize is to make stable or calm. It's also the resistance of movement or momentum. So a lot of people, even I, when I started archery, I grabbed a limb saver, little rubber, stupid brown and green camo looking thing that I put on there, and it did one thing very, very well. It reduced vibration and sound, but it didn't do something, and that was stabilize my bow. Now, anytime that you want to stabilize your bow, you have to remember that your best outcome is going to come when you put weight below your grip. The lower the center of gravity, the more apt you are to have a stabilization. Now, why do people, when they say, well, why would I ever need a stabilizer? I hunt in a blind, I hunt in a tree stand, I'm a Midwest whitetail hunter. Most of my shots are going to be under 40 yards. Well, believe it or not, it can help you even at 5 yards. It can help you at 15. It can help you all the way out to 90. If you want to understand the complexity of a stabilizer, you need to look at world-class, like World Cup archery target archers, especially the recurve and the open class shooters who are shooting, and you see it a lot at indoor, from Vegas to indoor nationals to the Rushmore Rumble, the USA World Cup and all of those, doesn't matter, again, the yardage, it's going to help stabilize. And people see these target archers with a 30-inch front bar and a 12 or 15-inch back bar, or like Tim Gillingham and now Paige Pierce have double back bars with a 2-foot piece of rebar that's holding everything together. Yes, it may look like a walker, and it's not because they're old. It's because it actually works. Actually, and believe it or not, Levi Morgan even has been playing around. And I know I'm sounding like a big name dropper, but it's easier because everybody can relate to what I'm talking about. You've seen this. Even if you don't follow target archery, you've seen some posts on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or even hunting shows where they have this setup. Now, why in the target archery world do we use long stabilizers? The longer the bar is, the stabilization bar, the rod, the carbon tube, whatever it may be made of, the longer that is, the less weight you can use to get the same effect. Now let's rewind a little bit and say, why do I need a stabilizer? Because all of us hold our bow up and we watch the pin. If you are doing things correctly, your pin will move a little bit. It may be a 16th of an inch in your scope, which would be 2 or 3 inches down on the target. It may be that you do a huge figure eight. if you have the proper stabilization, that pin will actually just sit and hover, kind of go back and forth, maybe a little up and down, but it's going to make a small U. For the individuals that use ShotSense, on like the Matthews has a ShotSense. It used to be like Mantis, I believe it was called. And there's been some other products out there that actually can track your shot, track your hold. And it works really well, especially if you're trying to set up the most consistent stabilization movement. You can run more weight or less weight or change your angle. But why do you need this? Because if your pin moves like you just downed a box of sugar daddies and had two Mountain Dews, half an hour later, I mean, the sugar rush is there. For those of you that drink coffee, if you have like an espresso, you're used to black Folgers and you take, you know, a couple cups in the morning, but then all of a sudden you go to a fancy place and you have an espresso, which is like a double shot, right? That caffeine. You can get the jitters. That's what your pin is doing. Now, is it because of fatigue? Is it because your muscles aren't in sync? Is it because your muscle memory is a little out of whack? There's a ton of things. You put adrenaline behind the bow, it's going to move. So how do we take that big, huge figure eight or the left to right and the up and down pin moving? When you have that, you create anticipation. You create what we call the negative side of shot timing. You're trying to time your pin in the middle when you pull the trigger. You're driving by. If you remember back when we talked about thumb releases and executing a release properly, if you let that float. Well, when we talk about float, it's not like a inner tube on a super windy day on the lake going up and down and up and down. What we're trying to do is talk about float that is consistently in, around, down, and up on the X-ring. So depending on your yardage, obviously your pin looks bigger at further yardage, and at close it's super, super small. You got to remember, if you're doing things correctly, your pin moves the same at 5 yards as aiming at something at 85 yards. It just looks exaggerated. So why do I need a stabilizer? To decelerate the pin movement or take away the pin movement so I decrease the chance of getting anticipation or punching the trigger or making a bad shot. Why do I need that in hunting? Because I'm going to pull back, put the pin on, and I'm going to send it. Well, okay, I agree with you. You're going to get super excited and you're going to do everything in your willpower to make it work, right? But if you do it for the 8,600 shots before that shot happens, you're more apt to let the bow and your muscle memory take over to where things are super, super smooth. No pin movement, less anticipation, less chances of making a bad shot. Now, different lengths and stabilizers. And today I'm just going to talk about hunting stabilizers. We've shot a couple of the 3D shoots outdoors and then we had snow and now we're back. I think there's another one coming up this Sunday. A lot of guys and gals are going to where you can actually put this to the test and understand how it's working at 20 yards on a piece of paper at any range, wherever you go or leagues just finished up. Minnesota State is this weekend up in Virginia or last weekend, whenever you listen to this. Shooting paper at 20 yards, you can still have the same effect, but it's a lot less, especially with a bow hunting rig. But stabilizers, there's different lengths. Now, when you keep hearing me say stabilizers as plural, S, most of your top archers and a lot of your more advanced hunters, not so much here in like the Midwest style, but your out west, longer shots, more wind, you're going to see dual stabilizers. You're going to see a front stabilizer, a front bar, and you're going to see a sidebar or back bar, depending on your terminology. Your front stabilizers, all stabilizers come in a variety of lengths, but most of your lengths are going to be 15 inches, 12 inches, 10, 8, and 6. Now, I don't know why they make a 6-inch bar. In my mind, I don't know. And this is my personal opinion. Take it with a grain of salt, right? But a 6-inch bar is basically so you look cool. If you have a 6-inch stabilizer, it's really not doing a whole lot. It may aid a little bit, but you're not really doing anything. Okay. What do I run? Almost every single bow I run, except for my turkey bow. Now, when I say turkey is I hunt in a blind. And I, just because there's no room, I've actually had this go wrong before where I had a 12 or 15 inch stabilizer and I'd hit the blind and I scared off the turkey that I was shooting at. But the only time I don't use a long bar in the front is when I'm in a blind or close quarters. Even our hard blinds, I can sit far enough back where I can use it. So on my rigs, I run a 15 inch front bar, sometimes a 12 inch, depending on the model and the length of the bow, axle to axle. And then on my sidebar, I usually run an 8 or a 10 inch. The sidebar, if I'm a right-handed shooter, meaning I'm holding the bow with my left hand, I draw the bow with my right hand, my stabilizer is coming off the left side, the shooter side of the bow if you're right-handed. If you're left-handed, your back bar would come off of the right side or towards the shooter. So that's just kind of like where that's what I run. There's a couple of things we'll talk about quick disconnects and degrees down. But I run a 12 to 15 inch front bar. Usually the bows are getting so incredibly light nowadays. The new Matthews Lift, the PSC Mach 30, last year's PSC Levitate. Even some of the, we'll put Hoyt's carbon bow in there, but it's not really light. It's a carbon setup. Bowtech, like their last year's was CP30, this year their Core SS and their Core SR, they're pretty light bows, right? So where you see a stabilizer really come into effect is, yes, they're light and they're great for packing in or getting up and down, you know, the bluff countries. They make it easier for a human being. Instead of having an 8-pound fully rigged setup, now you can have like a 5'8" to 6'1" pound rig, like totally set up. That's what it weighs. But this is very, very detrimental if you don't have a stabilizer on something that light. Especially you want stabilizing to happen below the grip. Stabilize your shot. So on that, the longer the axle to axle, usually the longer the front bar and the back bar. The shorter axle, then you would go down to like a 12 and a 8 or even a 10 and an 8. This is where your 6-inch stabilizer can come in as a sidebar. Sometimes just a little bit goes a long ways on your sidebar. But the weight, and I would buy a stabilizer that you can adjust, you can interchange the weight. You can add or take off the weight. Usually it's a 5/16 threaded rod that you can add ounces. Everything is measured in ounces on stabilizers. So if you talk about the bar weight, if you talk about the actual end weights, a lot of them will come with 2 or 3 ounces, and then you can purchase accessory weights and put on there. Tungsten is also something where you can have a lot of weight in such a little itty-bitty package. So like a tungsten 3-ounce weight is the same size as a stainless steel or aluminum 1-ounce weight. Probably not aluminum, but steel. So let's just take, for example, like my 33-inch bow that I'm shooting right now. I have a 15-inch stabilizer out the front with 5 ounces. I have a 10-inch stabilizer out the back with 9 ounces. We get this question all the time in the shop. Well, what's like the perfect ingredient? What's like the standard that you go off? Usually in the target world, we go 1 to 3. If there's 1 ounce on the front, you have 3 ounces on the side. If you have, you know, 2 ounces on there, and then you'd have 6 on the back. That's just like a way to start. I'm more of a 1 to 2 kind of guy because I run the pitch a little different on my back bar. But you're going to have to play. Unfortunately, playing at 20 yards, you get an idea, but you really want to shoot at like 40, 60 yards and see your pin movement, because it's going to increase and you want to decrease that so that you have less anticipation. I know I'm kind of talking in circles and in a roundabout way, getting back to the same thing, but I'm just giving you some ideas to help you on that. So if you're not going to run a sidebar, you're not out of the game. Still run a front bar and watch your stabilization decrease, or your stabilization will increase so that your bow movement decreases. You're going to have to play with this, honestly. Probably 90% of the bows that go out of the shops that I would guess, especially guys that understand, guys and gals that understand the, how stabilizers work, is going to be like a 10-inch front bar and a 6 to 8-inch back bar, 12 maybe. Now, we have some advancements in bows like Matthews has, what we call bridge lock. They're very expensive stabilizers, but they're extremely well-built, and the philosophy behind that bridge lock technology is not even being touched by anybody else. Most of your stabilizers are going to be a carbon rod with an aluminum cap, end cap, and a stainless steel threaded rod. So that's three different materials that are combined together to make it. Now, some of those stabilizers do a very, very good job at cutting away vibration and stabilizing. So you want to kind of play around with that too. There's rubber dampeners you can put on. There's certain things that you can put on the stabilizer to aid with that. If your bow sounds or feels like a tuning fork or like plucking the string on a guitar and you get that, you gotta have to cut it away. Is the proper stabilizer? There's probably three or four on the market that actually will take away that vibration. Now, there's also four or five on the market and in our shops that don't do diddly squat for vibration, but they dang sure make your bow hold really well. Is vibration a big thing? No. Is sound a big thing? Yeah, a little bit, right? We always hear the dreaded, oh, he jumped the string. Well, did he really jump the string, or did he jump the sound of the arrow moving towards him and his instincts took over? The bow going off might be the startle effect or the kickstart to him actually moving, or her doe, but it's, I'm more prone to think that they're getting out of the way of that arrow flight, the sound of that arrow getting closer to him. Does the bow startle him? Oh, absolutely it can. But this day and age, they're all getting super, super quiet. So it's easier to get away with this. Some brands that you want to look at and try. So Bridgelock is Bridgelock. That's from Matthews. That's if you own a Matthews bow that is, you know, 2 or 3 years old, you can utilize the Bridgelock and try it. On the opposite side of that, even if you have a new Matthews or a Bowtech or a PSC or an Elite or a Hoyt or Darton, can't leave Darton out. They're doing a great job this year. Or a Bear or a Prime. I'm missing a couple of them, but if whatever bow you have, you can thread your stabilizer in the front, and then some of them, most of them are going to have a back bar mount lower, and you can run your back bar bracket. With that being said, there's some tools that will make stabilization and your stabilizers easy. First thing I always get is, why in the world do you have a 15-inch stabilizer out the front? That is horrible. You're gonna hit things when it's hanging in the tree stand. You're going to hit things when you're in the box blind or when you're spotting and stalking, it's going to get caught on stuff. Well, sister, here's the thing. Every one of those situations, I have a 27 3/4 inch arrow with 1 1/4 inch broadhead and insert sticking out. 15 inches isn't even close to 27. So do you get what I'm saying? There's usually an arrow sticking out there. So I'm okay. I have clearance. For those of you that spot and stalk, especially out west, you're going to know that having a stabilizer that you can actually use as a pivot or a tripod for running your binos or when you stop and you set your bow down, it can actually aid you more than just stabilizing your bow. It can aid you in so many other ways. It's actually convenient, believe it or not. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you a back bar isn't inconvenient. a back bar, if you have it run properly, is not going to get in the way. Can it get in the way? Sure. Can it add weight? Absolutely. That's what you're doing. You're trying to stabilize. How do we add weight? Same thing we talked about. Here's a really good analogy that I like to take and let people understand. If you remember in grade school, we had a teeter-totter, right? The center of that teeter-totter is called a fulcrum. If on every playground in the world, that fulcrum is exactly in the middle. So if you have an 80-pound kid on one end and an 80-pound kid on the other end, that thing should, in real reality, be level. It should hold. Now, if I put a 150-pound kid on one end and a 60-pound kindergartner on the other end, obviously it's going to balance different. You're not going to ever make it balance even. You're going to have one teeter the other way, hence the word. So where can we move that fulcrum to make things more stable? Obviously, center is center. But if I have more weight on one end, I have to move the fulcrum. We're doing the same thing with a bow, but our bow and our grip is the fulcrum that will never move. So if I put a 15-inch stabilizer with 6 ounces on the front, I need to have something on the back. Obviously, it's not going to be 15 inches because it would hit the shooter. But if I run an 8 or a 10-inch, I'm going to have to add more weight so that it stabilizes. That's an analogy. Is every bow going to be perfectly balanced? No. It's going to create what we call a void. Now, a lot of people overlook the aspect of a sidebar. For those of you that draw your bow back and you get into your anchor, you touch your nose on the string, and you look through your peep and you line up your peep with your outer ring of your sight or scope, and you're like, oh, shit, my bubble is way to the left. Now I have to camp my bow that way or way to the right, vice versa. If you're stabilizing properly and you have your sidebar or back bar weighted properly, every one of my bows that I grab off the shelf, I draw back and I anchor, I very rarely have to move that bow to get that level. Now, if I'm shooting on a side hill or in the wind, that's a different story. Forget that. But when I draw my bow back on and I'm flat-footed or in a tree stand, that bubble is very, very close to center because my bow is balanced. I figured this all out in the off-season. So that's another aid in a back bar. Do you need one? No. Do you need a front stabilizer? Absolutely. Some brands to look like or look at. We talked about Bridgelock for Matthews, but let's talk about, let's say, for example, Bowtech. And a lot of these bows are getting very good at making their own stabilizer because why not, right? Made out of the same material, has the same label, looks cool, everybody. You don't want to put Chevy mud flaps on a Ford truck. So you can, don't get me wrong. And then there's some companies that don't have anything to do with the bows, and you can run those as well. But like Bowtech, they make their own center mass stabilizers now. Archery Country is tied together with 365 Archery, and we've made stabilizers for a long, long time. Jake and Eric and Chad up there, Jason's been involved too with the design of them. But we used to have like a modified stabilizer. Before that was the DVS system, which was like a 3/4-inch bar, real big fat bar. Had perforated ends on it, kind of, if you remember that look. Then we had the modifies with the cables. Then we went into what we call a micro DVS, which is a very, very small shaft or bar. And then you would add your weights to it. We kind of shrunk everything down. And now there's the V2, micro DVS V2, which is even a stronger, stiffer material. We're just kind of open up the whole package here because we're going to talk for a long time about all of this. But that's 365. They make some great stabilizers. Also, we brought in, we talked about Bowtex. We got 365. Hoyt makes a really good stabilizer. It's actually made by Fuse, which is a company owned by Hoyt, and they have some rubber dampener technology, which is good. HHA has some stabilizers out there. You can buy it. Most of these you can buy in kits, so you can get a front and a back bar and your quick disconnects. Matthews has another stabilizer called the Flatline, which is a couple years old now, which is a moderately sized bar with the EHS dampener in the end, which is going to be super, super dead. Conquest is a new company that we brought into Archery Country, and they make extremely good products at a very affordable price, so you don't have to break the bank on getting a stabilizer set up. They're Control Freak. It's called a 500 with Smack, S-M-A-C. That is a phenomenal bar. It's streamlined. Everybody is making a super small bar now. And the reason being, like, I'm looking outside the window right now, and it's about a 15 to 20, 25 mile an hour gusty wind. If I have a ton of surface area, that wind's going to catch that. Your bow is cut out to where it has very minimal surface area. It's a lot of riser, but it's cut out so wind can move through it. But if I put a big bar on there, like an inch or 3/4 inch or even 5/8, and it catches a bunch of wind, it's going to move. It's going to do everything opposite of what we talked about. So now a lot of people are running, you know, a 0.5 or even a 0.625, 5/8, but half or even smaller than that. So the actual stabilizer rod is super, super small. And then your weights are going to be the size of weights they are, because you have to have that amount of material to make it an ounce or two or three or four. So small stabilizers, I'm probably missing something in there, but that's a majority of what we carry. Like another company is AAE. Their Mountain Series is really good hunting stabilizer. But that's kind of the general idea. That's the big companies that you're going to want to look at. And the cool thing at any one of our shops is you can come in and you don't have to buy them, but you can try them. Ask one of the pro shop techs, like, hey, can I try this stabilizer and this stabilizer? And they'll walk over with you in the range, and they'll set them out there, and then you can just shoot. You can shoot for a half hour. Figure out which one has less vibration, which one feels better, which one stabilizes. Is it an 8-inch, a 10-inch, a 12, or even a 15? Play with it, and you'll know. You can get the same effect at 20, so that when you walk outside, it's going to be even better. With that being said, we're going to take just a moment for our sponsorship. This episode is brought to you by Archery Country, some of the best pro shops in North America. You can find at 4 locations, Waite Park, Minnesota, Brainerd, Minnesota, Rogers, Minnesota, or our brand new location down in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Check us out on the World Wide Web at archerycountry.com. Everything that you need in the industry to make your hunt better, to make your shooting competitions better, or simply to make your equipment better, we're here for you. Knowledgeable staff, friendly staff, and awesome turnaround times. Thank you from Archery Country. Hi guys, sounds familiar. Anyways, what are some tools that you're going to need when you have a stabilizer, especially if you come in and you buy a 12-inch front bar, right? Well, it's not going to fit in the case. It's going to suck to transport. Get a quick disconnect. It's a little bracket, has what we call a slug. Stainless steel threaded rod is going to go into that slug. Slug is going to go into the quick disconnect. You're going to tighten it up to take it off. It's a quarter turn, reverse, or counterclockwise, I guess you say. Pop it off. Find a little sock or a little sleeve, or put it underneath the foam in your case, and you're done. Back bar mounts. You're going to have a back bar or side bar mount. Very, very, very important piece of equipment. More money you spend on that, the better it's going to be. Right now, honest to God, owns the industry is an Atlas back bar mount made by Shrewd. Matthews has a branded one. You can get them right from them. AAE makes extremely nice back bar mount. It's called the Gripper. 365 makes some really good ones. They got a little bit lesser priced or inexpensive model for like $59. And then they got their big dog. That's going to be about $100, where you can actually change the pitch. And these are all quick disconnects so that you can take your back bar off, do the same thing. Now, not every bow made has a spot that's a threaded spot on the bottom of your riser, on the backside bottom of your riser. For those bows, you're going to have to run your back bar mount up with your front disconnector, front stabilizer. Something that we all did way back in the day. Very, very few of us do it anymore. We're going to have a back bar mount that's lower. Again, lower center of gravity is going to help stabilize better and faster. So with that being said, there's just a few tools that you got to remember, few items that you're going to have to get with your stabilizers. Or you can buy a kit. There's awesome kits out there for, I mean, you could walk in right now and grab a HHA, I believe it's called the Tetra set. 365 has a dual set where you have like a 10 and an 8, 10 and a 6 or 12 and an 8. You can get various models. It's an actual kit. But again, just play with it and try it. Stabilizers, as far as weights, they're going to come in 1 ounce or 3 ounce weights. You can buy some 5 ounce weights, but that's a little bit overkill because they're too big in my mind. And then if, and by all means, if there's listeners out there that are like, well, this guy is just whacked. This, it, what he's talking about, I don't need it. I just want a stabilizer to reduce a little bit of sound. You can still get them. I don't know why you would do that, but if you, I would just put weights down there in the same stabilizer hole. I really don't think you're doing anything with a 4 or 6 inch stabilizer. I'm sorry. It's just, it's a proven, right? But if you're that person that wants that, we do have them. I promise you. If you have any questions on stabilizers, just come in and try them out. Talk to any one of us, all of us. Shoot, if not a front bar, a front and a back bar. I'm not so sure about some of the guys in St. Cloud, but I know like Buck and Brandon, or sorry, same guy, Buck and John. John really has it figured out as far as like the out west setup. Carson shoots a little bit of target archery. He runs a pretty good bar system. Dan, now in lacrosse, and Eric, Seth, those guys, they all kind of play around. They all have different setups. Even here at this shop in Rogers, like, I have the big, long, gaudy-looking stabilizers, right? But Keith, he plays a little bit because he shoots a lot of 3D. Jack is more of your moderate. Like, he runs a 10-inch bar, I think, and an 8-inch. Jason likes really long stabilizers. And then Alex, he shoots a lot of different things up. And so depending on who your dude is, like who you like working with, we all have different ideas, and we can bounce off each other and help you get in the right way. With that being said, it's 32 minutes of me talking about stabilizers. I hope you get the idea of it. I'm going to touch a little bit on soft knock sets. Now, this has been something that's taken over social media in the last, 2 or 3 months. John Dudley had a big thing on it from Knock On Archery, and he's definitely not wrong, but it opened up the eyes to a lot of people. We've been doing it at Archery Country for a long time. Most of your shops out there will do it in a very variety of ways. Now, there's no wrong or right way. A soft knock set is a piece of serving. So let's take your bow. Let's say it's a brand new bow or a brand new string. I have the center of that string is called center serving, right? It's usually 5 to 6 inches. Your center serve is where you hook your knock. You hook up your knock, and there's going to be your D-loop there. Now, if you're a person that doesn't have soft knock sets, you're not out of the ball game yet. But you need to make sure that you do not have knock pinch. What that means, when I draw the bow back and I get into my anchor, if you were to look at a bow, it makes what we call a triangle. From your top axle to the pinnacle point of your D-loop to the apex, all the way down to the bottom cam, and then a flat line from cam to cam. The smaller your axle to axle is on your bow, the more acute that triangle is, that angle, the smaller, tighter it is. This can create havoc if you have knock pinch. Longer axle-axle bows have a more of an obtuse angle. They're never, ever going to be over 90 degrees. You're never going to be even close to 70 degrees. So you probably need to have soft knock sets, or your D-loop needs to be the best tie that your pro shop can do. If you don't have them, you got to make sure you don't have knock pinch. Easiest way to do this is when you draw your bow back and you don't have your finger on the trigger and you're aimed at a target, have somebody reach up and try to move that arrow. If it's super, super tight, you're probably going to have knock pinch. If you shoot through paper and you cannot get away from an up or down tear, even kind of like a left, up left tear, you probably have knock pinch. So you got your brand new bow, the center serving. I'm going to go 90 degrees off of my rest. My arrow is going to be perfectly level. You can level your string, you can level your bow, and you can level your arrow, or you can use a T-square. Easiest way to do it, hands down, T-square. Because you put it on your rest blade, it shows you where the bottom of your arrow is. Then you just need to make sure and measure or look at where your bottom of your arrow is to the center of your nock, and that's where your nock needs to be, right? So you can tie a soft nock set on the bottom, and then on the top of your nock. So this is how I would do it. I got my bow in the press. I've got my two. I use a Sharpie. T-square I put on the rest. I'm going to measure or look up where the bottom of that arrow is. And I'm going to put the bottom of the nock, I'm going to put a mark with my Sharpie. And then on the top, I am going to make just what we call a false mark. Like just to give me an idea where I need to center my nock. I always tie my top nock set first for the most part. Sometimes my bottom, depending, we work so fast that sometimes I forget which way I go first. But let's just say, for example, you're going to tie your top nock set first. Because if you have your bow in a vise and not a press where it's vertical, your arrow wants to move up because your 100 grain field tip and your insert is weighted. That's called front of center, and your nock wants to move up. So I got my marks, and I take a piece of serving material. The best nock soft nock set serving material you can use is BCY3D. It's like the perfect diameter. It's very, very rugged. Now I'm going to take and just like I'm going to go around the serving. I'm going to tie an overhand knot, like you're the first knot of your shoelace, right? So over and under and through. So I take and I tie that where my top nock set should be so that my arrow is perfectly level. That's the first knot. And then I go on the bottom of the string and I tie an overhand knot. Sometimes some guys we'll tie two overhand knots so that it kind of goes around the serving. I haven't found one's better than the other. It's just different styles. And then I'm going to going back up to the top, tie another, go back to the bottom, tie another, go to the top, tie another, go to the bottom, tie another. So it's basically six knots, but it's three on top, three on bottom. So there I have my top nock set. Then I'll tie a square knot and cinch it off, and then I'll burn it down and bulb it so it's super, super clean. Usually your soft nock sets are a different color than your D-loop, but it doesn't have to be. Now I'm going to make sure that I have the exact nock that I'm going to use when I'm shooting my bow or hunting. We see it all the time. People will get a standard set of arrows and forget about lighted nocks, and the lighted nock is a different diameter or different thickness than the regular nock. You want to make sure you do this for the thickest diameter that you're going to run. So I have my top nock set. I have my nock pushed up tight to that soft nock set on the top. Now you don't have to get a ruler or you don't have to get a caliper and figure out what 2 millimeters is or a millimeter. Just count on the serving, the center serve of the bowstring, have two lines. If you have a short axle bow, go two lines. If you have a 33 and longer axle bow, just go one of those serving lines. It's a millimeter. So then you can start your bottom soft nock set. Again, go around your center serving, tie an overhand knot, cinch it down really good in the spot it needs to be, creating 2 millimeters of space or millimeter and a half of space. Then I tie a bottom, then I come to the top, and then a bottom, and then a top. I usually go 4 to 5 on the bottom and 3 to 4 on the top knots. And I'm just talking about top knots, times everything by 2, right? Burn the knots away from you. Always try to burn your knots or do your square knot on the bottom side of the serving if it's in a vise or away from the shooter. That's what I like to do, or on the side. Very rarely do I do it on the top. So now I have a very good foundation of where I can put my D-loop. Now, if you're in a situation where your D-loop breaks, you need to change it out. Having soft knock sets, you don't ever have to measure again. You can take and change your D-loop out, and you still have where you're going to start and where you're going to finish. Not going to get into D-loops today. Soft knock sets. Now, there are some times where we have some bows that have a hard time getting tuned with having both knock sets in there. But if you do it properly and you have the right serving spacing, you're not going to have any problems, I promise you. Many of you are scratching your head going, well, wait, why do I need to do this? So again, if you talk geometry and you have that pinnacle or the apex of your triangle, you do not want to have a point that's sharp on that triangle because your knock will be so squeezed by the D-loop knots that you'll have inconsistencies in arrow flight. If I tie two knock sets, now I created a flat straight up and down piece to where my D-loop is pulling a top and a bottom that my knock is level and will always be level. And when I fire the trigger, my arrow flight is level and there's no pinch. There's no inconsistency. We all seen the dreaded pictures of oscillation, right? When someone shoots and the string looks like a wet spaghetti noodle and the bow looks like it's going to blow apart. As long as I've created a flat, straight up and down spot for my knock travel will be consistent. That's basically what soft knock sets are. Are there times where I only tie one? Absolutely. All of my target bows that I run a blade rest with, and there's going to be some guys that are scratching their head right now and are going to argue with me until they're dead. And a lot of them are my really good friends because they do the same thing every day. On a target bow, you can run top and bottom soft knock sets, and you'll be just fine. I run a blade rest. Things are different with a blade rest. I only want to tie bottom knock sets because I want to create pressure on that arrow to keep it on the blade, and I make damn sure that I have spacing so I have no knock pinch when I'm at full draw. I use a different D-loop material on my target bows than I do my hunting bows. So it's smaller. It gets tighter. I can create a very, very solid D-loop knot on the top that will not slide up or down with that material. Now, why you say, well, why won't you use that material on your hunting bows? Well, if you looked at my hunting bows, it's the same material. But if I were to set up your bow in the shop, I'm probably not going to use 23. Why? Because I don't know exactly what release or if you ever changed releases. A smaller diameter D-loop sometimes will not work with certain releases. It's actually some companies like Trueball send D-loop material with some of their releases so that you're using the right diameter. There's two diameters in D-loop. I told you I wasn't going to talk about D-loop, but now I am. There's a BCY number 24. That's the most standard D-loop in the world. There's also a BCY number 23. Brownell used to make one that was super small too that mimicked a 23. I use a 23 on my target rigs because I always use a hook release. So I never have to worry about the caliper not, you know, like the D-loop slipping through the caliper. I don't use a caliper style. I use a hook style, rather be a thumb or be a hinge or resistance is a hook style. So I can use a smaller diameter D-loop. I never have to worry about it. So soft knock sets, if you don't have them, maybe stop in the shop, eliminate any knock pinch, and takes 15 minutes at the most to get everything done. Any of us can do it for you. You can request it. Like I say, most of us are tying them for your bow setup. So that's your soft knock set episode, I guess. I got a really cool product I want to talk about real quick before I send you on your way. Fletching your own arrows is becoming a super, super cool thing, and a lot of individuals are seeing that it's not very hard to do. Plus, it saves you from having to run to the pro shop if you got some arrows that are wrecked or fletchings that are wrecked. Plus, you can customize it so you can have your own arrow wrap, your own design, your own color. You can play around with helical, vein size, right or left. You can figure out what vein configuration you want to have, four fletch, three fletch, shield cut, parabolic. customizing your own arrows is a really cool deal because they're yours. It's a pretty rewarding feeling. There's some tools out there that make it so unbelievably easy. We've all talked about fletching jigs, right? The oldest name in the fletching jig world is called Bitzenberger. They're really good. Don't get me wrong. You can get a right helical clamp, a left helical clamp, a straight clamp. You can run offsets left or right. You can do a lot of stuff with a Bitzenberger. In my mind, they're a little bit cheaply made. They're not the most consistent. Yes, we use them all the time. Until now. We've all heard about the Arizona Easy Fletch tower jigs where you can do three at a time. You can get a massive helical, a straight, a right or left. You can get the minis if you're always doing blazers or small vanes. You can get the regular pros. That's another good option. Boning makes a tower jig that we talked about. It's called the Calderon jig. Pretty consistent. You can switch out all of your inserts to have right, left, straight, 2 degree, 3 degree, 1 degree, or none. They're pretty good. But now the newest fletching gear, we don't carry last chance in the shop. If you're going to get a last chance, we can order it for you. You're going to spend a ton of money. A lot of your target archers out there are using a last chance. I forget the name of it, but it's Easy Jig or something. It's a really cool jig, but it's a lot of money. And I'm here to tell you it's a lot of money you don't have to spend now. Because OMP, Outdoor Mountain Products, I believe is what it's called, made a new jig called the Phoenix. You can purchase this with a right clamp, you can purchase it with left clamp, or you can get a straight left and a right clamp all in the same jig. This baby is the easiest jig to set up. It's the easiest jig to duplicate over and over and over. If there's one thing in archery that you, besides shooting, that you need consistent, is you need every arrow from arrow 1 to arrow number 25 to be exactly the same. You can't have different variables and expect the same results. OMP Phoenix fletching jig is by far the easiest to use, easiest to set up. Super, super reliable. It has an extremely strong magnet. You can run four fletch at 90 degrees, a four fletch at 105 and 75, or you can run a three fletch at 120 degrees, all in the same setting. It retails, I think it's like right around $140 mark, and then the clamps are another 20, 30 bucks if you wanted multiple clamps. You need to stop in and check out the OMP Phoenix fletching jig. With that being said, I appreciate each and every one of you listening. We'll try to get some more out to you. Thanks again for you guys and gals that mention the podcast in the shops. It helps us kind of get a return on if they're actually working for you. We're not out here trying to make money off the podcast. We do it because we enjoy it. We are going to get some of the guys from Brainerd and some of the guys from Waite Park and also Lacrosse on with just the timing thing and getting everything worked out. But on behalf of Archer Country, thank you very much, and we'll see you on down the road.
Thank you for listening to Archery Country Podcast.